Good morning, folks. Boker Tov, Shabbat Shalom. Welcome back. And although we at least have one person with us who is still in the process of celebrating the final week of Sukkot. Are you past the first?
Yeah, they're in the middle of Sukkot.
In the middle of Sukkot. For a lot of us that use a non-equinox-related calendar, we have just finished the week of Sukkot, too. So Chag Sameach for those that are still in the process. In any case, what we're going to do today is talk about the thing that also is generally associated, at least traditionally, with the annual Torah cycle, that is Simchat Torah. And we begin the cycle anew with the first reading in the entire Torah. Of course, it's the first book. And in that case, that means that the name of the book, Bereshit, also is the same as the name of the Torah portion. Amazing how that works out when you start with the name being the first few words. And this, of course, is probably one of the most information-packed Torah portions in the entirety of Scripture. Literally the bedrock, the basis upon which everything else is based. And the problem with trying to teach Bereshit in 1 week, and I do kind of, just once in a while, like the idea of a triennial Torah cycle where we do the Torah in 3 years. And this would be one of those weeks when that's useful. Because it's always a real challenge when we look at Bereshit, the beginning, in the beginning, and talk about the Torah to say, oh, there's so much here. We could probably spend 40 hours just talking about the information that's packed into this portion. So, how do we get our hands around all of that? And today, what I'm going to do, I hope you folks will find it interesting. I'm going to do kind of an entirely different take on the way that I've looked at it in the past. We'll still touch on some of the elements. Of course, as you know, on Erev Shabbat on Friday night, I try to go through the whole thing the way it's listed there, and just not in as much depth, of course, because there's plenty to be had. But I wanted to introduce it this way today, with first a teaser, because one of the things that this Torah portion ends with is what happens, Genesis chapter 6, we end right at the 6th chapter, about verse 8 or so, it depends on which, whether you're reading a Hebrew or an English Bible, but essentially around the time of Noah and the flood. So this is everything up until the flood, the antediluvian time period, if you will. There's the term that some of you may have heard. And, of course, there's also a really fascinating reference. It appears, among other places, Matthew 24, verse 37, when Yeshua is being asked, hey, what's going to be the sign of your return? How are things going to look in the end of days? You know, what do we need to be aware of? And the first thing he says is, be not deceived. And then there's a whole lot of other information that follows. And then, finally, he says the following. And let me read it out of the Shem Tov's Hebrew version of the translation. And Yeshua again said to his Talmidim, his taught ones, as it was in the days of Noah, so will it be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man. Now what's fascinating to me, and I just noticed this again this week, because we just finished the season of the fall feast that begins, the countdown, as you know, begins with Yom Teruah, the day of shouting, the day of trumpets, and then all of the other clocks that are based on that start then. You have the 10-day countdown to Yom HaKippurim, Yom Kippur, and then finally it ends with the week, or actually a week plus one, of the time of Sukkot that's often associated with the wedding feast and so forth. But right before we get to this place where Yeshua says, hey, as it was in the days of Noah, so will it be, he tells us all kinds of stuff's going to happen. Heaven and earth will pass away, but as that time, the day or that time, the day or the hour or the time, no one knows. Not even the angels of heaven, my Father only. Well, the colloquialism there about no one knowing the day or the hour is often applied to the time of Yom Teruah, because it's the only feast that happens on a new moon. Everybody's heard all of this stuff. But what interested me was the fact that literally that reference precedes, verse 36 precedes verse 37, as it was in the days of Noah, so will it be in the days of the Son of Man. And here we are. We've just had the season where no one knows the day or the hour until it comes. And that's part of the reason why I, at least, am a proponent of the new moon, because it fits the concept that he'll tell us when it's sighted. You got two or three witnesses when we start. Okay. You don't have to necessarily buy that. But it is interesting that then we're right back to as it was in the days of Noah. So the question always comes up, right? Are we there? Where are we? What were the days of Noah like? And there are lots and lots of answers to that. I intend today to kind of at least touch on a couple of the possibilities, and I hope this will be in a way that you probably haven't heard before. And, what is Mark's qualification to bring something different to this particular study? Answer, I'm a nerd. All right, so this has to do with the nerdiness coefficient and essentially an engineering background. You'll see that. I will, again, I guess you'd say this is a warning. I'm going to wax a little bit nerdy today, but I'll try to do it in a fashion that will keep everybody on board with us. And not lose folks in the nerdiness. In other words, I'm not going to go to the chalkboard and do 2 pages worth of differential equations or anything like that. So rest assured, you probably won't even have to say the words again. But we are going to talk about some other things that I hope will begin to shed some light on some concepts that are right here from the beginning. And literally inform almost everything that goes on in what's called control theory in engineering, and it's the basis for not only, how do you build an autopilot for an airplane, or how do you build almost anything that makes up most of modern electronics and filtering and so forth, but I'll say it really in a nasty fashion, how do you control a totalitarian society? Answer, well, yeah, call it control theory. So here we go. I'll even tell you the title of this one. I just had the title come to me, praise Yah, about 2 minutes before we started the teaching. I had another title in mind, but this is the one that I was told I ought to use. At least that's what it seemed to me. Call it free will plus control theory equals self-selection. Okay, one of the big questions, and you see this argued about in, I don't like this word, theological circles. What does it mean to have free will? Well, I will contend that free will is literally central to the entire concept of the Torah, and it starts right here in the beginning. What is it about man that's unique? We'll touch on that again. He is created in the image of Elohim. He has the breath of life in him. He has some other characteristics. But one of those certainly seems to be free will. In Deuteronomy 30, we talked about that just a couple weeks back. It's choose life. I've laid before you this day life and blessing, death and cursing, so choose life. So there's this element of free will. And yet, what is kind of cool, and here's where I wax nerdy as an engineer. You go through the math, and you understand, this was a sophomore or junior level class when I was in college. I remember taking my first class in what was called control theory. And you had to have 3 semesters of calculus before you could take the class. That was a prerequisite. I think Diffie-Q came later, but maybe the same semester or so. And then, once you had the first class in control theory, the math really got heavy. But it's fascinating. So how can you have both free will and control theory? Ah, therein lies the beauty of the entire creation, I will suggest, and what we are literally seeing play out now. So let me introduce it this way. I saw this story, and I thought it was an interesting article. As you know, I read a number of people that write things associated with the weekly Torah portion. One of my favorites, is a fellow named Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks. He is a Brit. And in this case, I saw the story. I thought it was kind of interesting, but I wasn't going to do anything with it. And in part because the subtitle here, he called it the 3 stages of creation, which is kind of interesting. We'll talk about his concepts there. And I do find them, fascinating, and they lead right where I want to go, which is why I ended up deciding to talk about it. But also this, the enormous challenge, he says, and privilege to be like God. Whoa, say what? The enormous challenge and privilege to be like God. He's talking about there are elements of our creation that help us to be, in turn, creators. Okay, that's cool. But remember, Genesis 3, we have the Nahash, the serpent. It says, he trots out the first 2 big lies, probably the most universal lies in history. And one of those is, you can be like God. You will not die. He begins it by asking a question, of course. Yea, has God not said, or has he said? What did he really say? Hey, did you listen carefully? If you didn't, I'm going to trick you. And then he follows those up with the 2 big lies. You can be like God. So how can we be both like Elohim and know that that's a lie, in a way, and yet created in his image? You see? There does seem to be a contradiction there. Scripture tells us we're created in His image. Doesn't tell us exactly what that means. And yet, the lie from the serpent, the Nakash, that gets literally everybody ever since in so much trouble has to do with you can be like God. There's got to be a difference, a distinction, some discernment here that we need to focus on. So that is one of the things that I hope to be able to touch on today. And of course, as always, folks, if there are questions, especially when I start to wax nerdy, I'm always happy to get the questions and to deal with them. I'll either do them in line or we'll take them in a way that seems to me the most appropriate. And by the way, same thing goes for people that are listening later. You can email me if you'd like, Mark, M-A-R-K, at Mark Nywatt. Nywatt.com, mark@marknywatt.com, and I'll try to incorporate those or get an answer to you and so forth. But I said I wanted to go through at least a couple of the points that Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks made about his three stages of creation. And he says the first chapter here of Genesis contains a teaching. Well, obviously, it has a whole bunch of them, but this is a pretty good one. It tells us, he believes, how we can be creative. Like him, how we can be creative too. It's namely done in three stages. Step one, and we know this is true, it's right there. Let there be. Right? Let there be light, and there was light. So step one is the stage of saying, let there be. Now you've heard this too. He spoke the world into existence, created it ex nihilo. This is what the word bara, bereshit bara Elohim, in the beginning, created Elohim literally out of nothing, something. And the first of those things, of course, is let there be light. And what does it say? And there was light. So there's step two. Let there be, and step two, there was. And the third stage, and we see this, and here's where I thought, well, okay, let's see where he's headed with this. Third stage is seeing, observing, I'll say it this way, testing even, that it was what? Tov, in the Hebrew, ki tov, it was good. So you got the three steps, let it be. Now, I'm not going to sing the Beatles song. Then there was, and then check it out. Test it. Is it? Yep, it is good. So the beginning here, and this is kind of fascinating. We could probably spend a long time talking about Hadebarim, the words or the word, the concept of creation by word. He spoke the word. He spoke the world. Basically, all of these things, somehow or other, are intimately created with right there what's said in Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. And that's where, again, we could spend a long time talking about the details. Today, though, I'm going to gloss over some of that and talk about some of the other really fascinating elements that have to do with the third step. And I'm going to call it the testing step, the feedback step, the evaluation step. And, well, we're also going to see one other thing that I will contend is key to this, the difference checking step. You notice that throughout creation, as he's creating these things, there is a process of separation. In engineering, we call this a difference engine. In other words, you see, here's what I want, here's what I got, and let's see if there's a difference between what I want and what I got. And if the difference is really small, then, hey, we've done a good job. It's good. It's tov. But if it's not, now we can hone the process. You have to check and see if it's a bigger difference than you'd like. Well, what can we do to fix it, right? This is the feedback process. You build something, you test it, you evaluate. If it falls short, you do a better job. Now, what's fascinating is we don't seem to see that in Genesis, but I'm going to suggest, without building doctrine on it, but just suggest there are those that note, hey, verse 2 is kind of fascinating. It says, the earth was tohu vabohu, without form and void. Some suggest, you know, it's called the gap theory, that maybe there was a previous version that didn't work out so well, failed the test, wasn't tov. Do we know that? No. Well, although there admittedly are some clues we see in the prophets, the reference to Lucifer and the Son of Light and various other things that kind of indicate, maybe there is some support for that. But we know as human beings that certainly our first prototype isn't necessarily the final product. We do test. All right, and it's the difference that is the key here. And the difference part of this process shows up over and over and over again in Genesis. All right? So right after, let there be light, and there was light. We see the test. Elohim saw the light, and it was tov, great. And then what? He divided the light from the darkness. There's a separation. A distinction is being made. Literally, a winnowing process, if you will. Separate, this goes over here, this goes over there. He called the light day, the darkness he called night, evening and morning. Yom Echad. All right, well, how about that firmament thing? Whatever that is. Well, let's divide it. It's waters. We'll make waters above and waters below. A division, again. Called the firmament, Ha-Shemayim, or just Shemayim, and that was the second day. And then let the waters be gathered together. Make another distinction, difference, separation. Dry land appears. Seas. That was Tov. There's a continuing process of separation. And then there's something unique that happens on the day that was the third day. We get the first indications of life form, things that propagate according to their own kind. Herbs, grass, seeds, trees. This too is Tov. And then there's a firmament, division. Lights to divide the day from the night for signs, for oat, and so forth. That too was Tov, fourth day. And then we get more forms of life. Now we're going to see not just plant life, but animal life, fish life, bird life. That too is Tov, fifth day. And they bring forth. All of this is Tov. And then finally, verse 26. Now we've alluded to this. This is key. Let us make man in our image, after our likeness. Let them have dominion over all of these other things, fish of the sea, fowl of the air, cattle, over all the earth, all the creeping things. And it says, yep, he did. Elohim created man in his own image, in the image of Elohim he created them. We see it twice, repeated backwards and forwards, just in case there was any doubt. Male and female he created them. I'll come back to that. Seems important somehow. Almost like he had a point there in dividing the halves, right? And he blessed them, gave them the first command. Be fruitful and multiply. Replenish the earth, subdue it, have dominion over all these things that I have given you. Fish of the sea, fowl of the air, every creeping thing. Herb yielding seed. And now I'll be a little bit nerdy. You got 5 days of Tov, right? Call it Tov times five. First day, second day, third day, Tov times five. Now we add in man. What's the number of man? Well, we know that it's often referred to as six. He's one short of perfection. Seven is the number of completion or perfection. Man's one short of that. He's also created on the sixth day. There have been movies to make that point. So you got Tov times five plus man. And what's the result? He's supposed to be Tov Meod. It's not just good. It's Tov Meod. It's very good. Really good. But wait. Okay, at this point, he takes a rest. Things are looking not just Tov. They're looking pretty good. Really good. And as we know, there are going to be problems. Well, we're going to see those in Genesis 3. And as I often remark, you know, if it wasn't for just a few little problems that crept in, the book would end right there at the end of Genesis 3. It would say, and they all lived happily ever after in the garden. And they walked in the cool of the day, and it was all Tov Meod forever. Ha'olam. But no. Man was given free will. And with free will, well, again, there also comes this concept of a test. A difference engine. I'm going to use some other terms here as we go through this idea of testing for a second. Not just a difference engine, but in engineering we talk about filters. You'll see that the math, well, I won't show you today, but the math of filters is very much wrapped up in control theory. It's a screening process. You know what a physical filter is, right? You have a screen. It's got sandy water. You run the sandy water through a screen. It filters out the big stuff and lets the purer water come through. If you want even purer water still, you got to filter it more and so forth. Well, how about if you want to create a man that can be a real companion? And you still want to have free will. Do you see that there's a certain incompatibility there? Suppose some of them aren't Tov. Suppose man is just plain nasty. Oh, we're working up to that. Then what? How can you have free will and still get, well, what is the goal of creation, right? What is the end, the point, the desirable outcome? What is the Creator looking for? We don't know His heart. We don't know His mind. We're told a lot about it, but we can't possibly be, you know, in His place. You know, your mind is not my mind, we're told in a number of places. But can we at least kind of sort of think, all right, what was He really looking for? What was the point of creating man? And I've made the joke about the old laugh-in show. Remember that? Judy Carn. I'm your walking, talking Judy doll. If all He wanted was a walking, talking Judy doll, a little automaton, right? A bot of some kind. Something that would just simply wave its hands and say, you are wonderful, you are almighty, you, oh praise, you are what we desire, oh God almighty. You know, even without having to have quite His level of intellect or understanding, I think most of us would go, well, somehow that's not quite satisfying. Right? If I want to really interact with a companion, somebody who was created in my image to be like me or like Him, well, free will seems to be an integral part of that. That brings me back to the title. I'll mention it again. We'll kind of work up to it, see if it makes sense. Free will plus something. What's the something? Well, that's what we're talking about. Ends up with the desired goal, self-selection. How does it work? Well, okay, I've already tipped my hand. This thing called control theory, it's not so much about control as a means of saying you don't have free will. No, it's a method of selection. It's a filtering process. It's a difference process, right? What do I want? What have I got? How can I tell? Well, I'll let these things that have free will select themselves. It's the only way. It's the only way to create something that has free will that still meets the goal of the Creator who created us in His image is to let us self-select as those who would be good companions in whatever form He has for Him. How do we know? Well, we don't. But we know that there is a testing process in place, and He's written it down for us. Now, another way of looking at the whole story, right, of Scripture, and this is the way I often phrase it, and it's not unique to me at all. You'll hear it said that, He knew the end from the beginning. He had a plan. He had this perfect plan. We see it laid out here. You will bruise His head, and He will bruise your heel. Let's see. Let me get that the other way around. But in any case, we know that there is clearly an implication that something's going to happen that's bad. And of course, we see that when the bad thing does happen. He tells the serpent, the Nachash, you're cursed. I'll put enmity between you and the woman and her seed and your seed. You shall bruise her heel, and they shall bruise your head. So people say, okay, well, this looks like part of this plan. It unfolds after Genesis 3. And what do we see? Well, we know that it's got to do with a plan of redemption. We know that the Torah made flesh is going to come at some point and kind of straighten things out. But we know it's not done yet. There's still a heaven and earth that still exists. We're still seeing this plan unfolding. And we're looking at it from within. That makes it a little bit more difficult. What I'm going to suggest is, and this is true of most things in engineering, you can look at it from different domains. We'll even hear talk in engineering, really, really nerdiness here, just a word. You'll hear talked about as time domain versus frequency domain. And transform theory. In other words, I can actually look at what's happening instant by instant, or I can step back and I can use a spectrum analyzer or some other kind of tool to analyze things in a whole different way of seeing them. Frequency domain as opposed to time domain. Because cycles repeat. Hey, you know what? That's an illuminating way of thinking about the creation process. We can look at it from different viewpoints. And one of those things I'm doing today is suggesting a different viewpoint, the control theory understanding. And it's also a frequency domain understanding, as it would turn out. Let's go back to the three stages briefly. We got the speak it, check it out. Well, speak it, and then it is, and then check it out. Test it. So, He spoke the world into existence, and Yahuwah said, let there be light, and there was light, and what? Check it out, it is Tov, it's good. Over and over again in Scripture, we see a process of winnowing, or testing, or proving. look at the whole story and the study of Abraham. The sages will say you can find 10 tests in the life of Abraham. Some folks might be able to find more. Okay, but Abraham over and over again. Leave the place that you grew up. Leave your home, your family, everything you know. Come to the land that I will show you. Isn't that a test? It's a separation process, right? It's a difference engine. Going to take Abraham, who's here. He's not even Abraham yet, right? He's Abram at that point. And say, go somewhere else. Does he go? If he doesn't go, he doesn't pass the first test. But he does. He goes. He's separated. Well, then there are other things. And eventually, of course, we end up with the Akedah. Your son, your only son whom you love. Do what I'm going to tell you. That might seem foreign to those who don't pass the test. What's Abraham's mindset? He knows that he's been made a promise. The promise says, this son Isaac is going to be the one through whom all of these other promises are going to happen. So I don't know how this is going to work out, but I know one thing. It's going to work out the way the Creator wants it, and I'm fine with that. So I'll do what He says. He passed the test. He's filtered. He's screened. Guess what? Abraham, line comes through him. Obviously, if he hadn't been willing to do that, he didn't pass the test. Now, what would have happened? Well, we don't know. We're not told. I have a suspicion that the Creator had a plan for all of these things. We're going to see it with all kinds of other people, literally throughout Scripture. With Moshe, you see it. With the priesthood, you see it. With the Levites, they self-select. Who's with me? After the golden calf. We are, say the Levites. They come down and they do what they were told to do. They become the priestly group throughout history. Over and over again, we see it with David. We see it with you name it. We see other tests. Ahab comes to mind. Kings, folks that didn't pass the test. Bilaam. And, of course, the question is for each of us, right? Do we or do we not? Do we understand? Are we going to see? Are we going to pass? Are we going to do whatever it is that we're told to do appropriately? Adam, arguably, had one simple commandment. You can eat all this stuff. Just this one tree. Don't eat it. And he has a more difficult test, as it turns out. And we see this, and this is kind of where I want to go next anyway. As we're talking about this plan, and how does it play out in the time domain, it plays out with, all right, here's Adam, here's the fruit, here's Chava. He thinks a lot of Chava, Eve, obviously. Here comes the disturbing influence. You could even call this the beta tester if you want. I remember a discussion I had with a rabbi friend years and years ago. Hey, Mark, you know, Christians have a different attitude about the adversary, Ha Satan, than us Jews do. We see him as a company man. He's kind of like the prosecuting attorney, you know, fancy tailored three-piece suit, gold watch, wingtip shoes. He's also what we would, when I was back in engineering, my early days with IBM, we called this a beta tester. We had a whole group called, basically it was test engineering, project test, product test. They changed the names periodically, but they basically did the same thing. It's all about saying, okay, you built this product, you think it's good? Aha, well, we'll just see about that. And what was the job of these people? And they wore suits in those days. They broke your product. Seriously, that was their job. And they did a good job. They broke it good. So you'd send your new printer, your new computer, your new disk drive, whatever it was, to product test. And they'd come back. Usually it took less than a day, first time. We broke it. Ha, ha, ha. We did good. They earned their money. Well, here comes the Nechash. Can you break this? Can you break the free will situation here? There are limits, right? Product test has limits, too. In product test, the rules are you can't put a dynamite stick under the new product and say we broke it. That's not fair. Okay, but we can do certain things. We can basically ask it to do things that it's supposed to be able to do, maybe all at the same time. Then what happens? Maybe we can ask it to do things in a cold room or a hot room or high and hot or cold and wet. You know, we got numbers of ways of seeing if your product is going to be up to snuff. And here is the test for Adam. And it's not Adam that fails in the way you'd think, right? This is clever. This is product test. By the way, I'm not saying that's all that the Nechash is up to. And he does, in fact, get cursed. So obviously there's more going on here than meets the eye. But the point is, he doesn't lie to her up front. He asks her a question first. That seems to be one of the rules. He gets her, Chava, to make a mistake. And as I like to say, it's a mistake that he was able to drive a truck through. Well, what does God say, really? What does he really say? Well, we can eat all this stuff, except for this one. And we're not even supposed to touch it. Can't even touch. Did he really say that? No, he didn't say that. He just says, no, not to worry. You really won't die. He gets her to touch it. Presumably, she has to touch it before she can pick it up and look at it and eat it. And then, this is when the test hits Adam, the man. See, he's not told directly to eat it. Adam now has said, uh-oh, oh, man, I am caught between a rock and a hard place. That woman, she just now killed herself. I really liked her. What am I going to do? I guess I'll eat the fruit, too. Wrong answer. Okay, there were better answers, and we can talk about that on another day. But I will contend, always have, that if we read carefully what it says here, the test was failed when Adam, the man, mankind, ratified the bad decision that Eve had already made. Nothing happened to her until he, in fact, ate that forbidden fruit, and then the eyes of both of them were open. And then we see some other things that happen here, too. Okay, this is part of the bigger plan. All right, Creator says, not to worry, okay? I have a control theory in place. I got a plan in place from the beginning. I've given these creations that are created in my image, gave them free will, kind of knew this was going to happen. So now what? It's not plan B, it's plan A continued. So the first test was failed. Adam and Chava eat the fruit, and they realize they're naked, and they have knowledge, it would seem knowledge of some kind, and immediately what's going to happen is a shalak occurs, a separation, a sending away. They get exiled, out of here, out of the garden. They don't die immediately. If he just whacked them right at that point, arguably, right? He took a piece of dynamite, put it under the new product. Well, that doesn't work. Now there's nothing. Maybe you got to go back to Tohu Vabohu and start over again. But that wasn't where he's going this time. In fact, what he does is he curses the source from which Adam was made, right? Adam made out of Adama, ground. And I'll say it this way. The feedback loop begins. There's where we're going to get just a bit nerdier. Because control theory, folks, always involves a feedback loop. Now, I've already kind of alluded to this, but let's talk just briefly about how it works. And I'll give you a quick example. This is the example I use every time. It's one I'm familiar with. Most people, even if they haven't flown a plane, have heard about an autopilot. And nice thing about an autopilot, really, it's fairly simple. A simple autopilot, it's called a wing leveler, really is a simple thing. And it sits, behind the panel of the airplane, and it says, all right, here's how we're going to work. We want to go straight. The point, the job, the goal, the end of this product is to make the plane fly straight. Now, it doesn't sound hard. Make the plane fly straight. If the plane starts to go to the right, you got to turn back to the left. But if it goes to the left, you turn back to the right. What could be easier? How do you make it work? Well, you build a sensor of some kind, a testing device, and it takes the difference. It's a difference engine, real simple. See which direction we're going. Is that the direction we want to go? If the answer is yes, keep going. If the answer is no, the difference engine says, no, we're more to the right than we need to be. Well, what do? You say, well, then we need to go back the other way. So if we're too far to the right, you turn back to the left. Simple. If we're too far to the other way, you turn back the opposite direction. So it's a negative feedback loop, is what an engineer would say. As a matter of fact, here I get really nerdy. If you have a feedback loop and they call the elements G and H, you can derive the equation, and what you end up with is the control theory is GH over 1 plus GH. And when you look at the math, literally, out of that, folks, the entire differential equation, cyclical, damped, exponential, or underdamped, the way that the entire universe works literally comes out of that. Isn't that cool? You see cycles, cycles upon cycles, cycles within cycles, all kinds of things. Now, I'm not going to force the math on you any more than I've already said, but it does simply boil down to this. You take the thing that you want, and you say, okay, am I going the right direction? No. What direction am I going? I'm going this way. Well, then go back the opposite way and keep looking. And eventually you'll find, oh, well, now I'm back on course again. Good. Stop. Just keep going straight. What the feedback engineers, the control theorists will say is, all right, now what happens is what's called a disturbance. Right? In an airplane, the disturbance is turbulence, maybe. Or a crosswind. Got a crosswind that's blowing and the plane is drifting off course. Well, we know what to do about that. Drift it back the other way. How far? How hard? Right? Do we turn the controls lock to lock? Or do I just go a little bit? Well, you kind of got an intuitive feel that going a little bit's better than going lock to lock. Matter of fact, you can even end up with things that are called pilot-induced oscillations and unstable systems. And yeah, planes have crashed because somebody didn't understand the math. And the control system overrode the pilot. There are all kinds of rules about how the pilot needs to be able to turn the autopilot off nowadays. Imagine that. You have to have at least three ways to disconnect an autopilot that goes ape on you before it can be certified. Right? I need to be able physically to push harder on the controls than the autopilot can push. And if all else fails, there's an off button. Okay? And finally, if that fails, I can pull the breaker on the panel and cut the power to the damn thing. That'll stop it. It better. In the case of the testing here, the Creator has built an entire world, given man dominion over it, and said one simple test up front. Don't eat this fruit. And we're going to allow the beta tester, the Nakash, to come in and provide that disturbance, the crosswind, the turbulence in the whole process, and see if the autopilot goes off course. Answer, yeah, it did. Failed. Failed the first test big time. And then we get the negative feedback loop. Going to be shellacked, separation, exile. Again, a difference. You wanted to be here, you're not, now you're somewhere else. Furthermore, the ground is cursed for your sake. And interestingly, as we see this first test, we're also going to see the setup for the second test. I've always thought this was fascinating, but I'm going to point out today, the first test and the second test, almost exactly the same form factor. Right? It's the woman who gets the second talking to after the serpent. Right? So first we hear the serpent, you're cursed. In the dust you go. Then he speaks to the woman. He's working his way up the chain of authority. To the woman he says, now you're going to be a lot of pain for you in childbirth. Notice, she's going to have children. He had a plan. This was going to happen regardless. The feedback loop doesn't end here. They don't get whacked instantly. He already knew the end from the beginning. This was going to happen. This is part of the continuing process, the feedback loop. Your desire, your teshuka, will be for your husband, and he shall rule over you. There is a control aspect here. Adam already had, the man already had dominion. He had naming authority over all the animals. He named, in fact, Isha, his wife. He later, after this, he names her Chava. He names the process of, womanhood, if you will, the type. And then he names the individual, Chava. She's the mother, this one here, of all living. So he has a number of forms of authority, and we're going to see one more. Your desire will be to your husband, your teshuka. That's your the way you're created and built, male and female, he created them. But he shall rule over you. He will have dominion over you. Then to Adam, he says, look here, you blew it, bud. All right, that's a paraphrase. Most of you know that. You blew it because you hearkened. That word's been used before. You didn't hearken to me. You're supposed to have been hearkening to me, your creator. You hearkened to her instead. You heard and obey your wife. And you did that which I told you darn well, you knew it, not to do. So, cursed is Ha'adama, the ground, for your sake. That's how you're going to eat. It's going to bring forth thistles and thorns, and you're going to have to toil in the sweat of your face to get your bread. And you're out of here. Okay, they were sent forth out of Gan Eden. We see the second test in the very next chapter. Adam knows Eve. He bears a son. She bears a son. Cain. And Cain has another brother, Abel, who is a keeper of sheep. Cain was a tiller of the ground. There's a difference there. And there's a problem. Problem is that Abel's offering was better received by Yahuwah than the one that Cain gave. So he is upset. His countenance fell. And Yahuwah says to Cain, why are you so upset? What's the problem here? If you do well, won't you be lifted up? If you don't, well, listen to this, right? Same exact form of the feedback, the negative feedback, right? Eve was chastened. That's negative feedback, folks. You did something that should not have done? Answer, we're going to make it painful so you don't do it no more. Negative feedback. Go the opposite way. It'll be easier. All right. Well, in this case, the chastening takes this form. If you do well, great. But if you don't do well, sin crouches at the door. At the door. And unto you is its teshuka. But you may, not shall in this case, may rule over it. Turns out Cain wasn't listening. He didn't. He slew Abel, his brother, and his brother's blood cried out literally from where? Ha Adama. And who gets cursed this time? Not the ground. It's already cursed. It's Cain. You're cursed from the ground, which opened its mouth, her mouth even. It's a feminine form of the word, right? Adama, to receive your brother's blood. So it ain't going to yield its fruit to you, its strength to you anymore. You are now a fugitive and a wanderer on the earth. He is exiled from an exile and from his profession, if you will. Whoa, I can't handle this, he says. All right, got a plan for that too. And as it turns out, we're going to see Cain still goes out and he brings forth. Others come from Cain and other things come from him as well. So even out of this second failure, the second test, the process continues. All right, now I've kind of already outlined the third element of all of this, or maybe the first element, part of the process. The reason we have a feedback loop, the reason why we have to have an autopilot in an airplane, think about this. And most folks that have flown understand this. You know, on a smooth day, nice, smooth, sunny fall morning, I can take the plane, go up to cruising altitude, trim it all nice and proper, get the wings level, and take my hands off, and it'll fly straight and level for a long time. Just fly, 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 all by itself. You've seen it with a car, right? You get the car pointed down a nice, straight stretch of road, it'll go for quite a while. Unless what? Unless there's a disturbance. A bump in the road knocks it off kilter. Or maybe you got a tire that's out around. Or some kind of disturbance. In the airplane, like I said, it's turbulence or it's a crosswind or it's, something in the plane shifts. You got a person in the back seat, decides they want to sit on the other side. The plane will literally turn that direction. So you got disturbances. In engineering, we talk about noise, you know, as a disturbance. Errors, bit errors, signals, things that shouldn't happen but do. Crosswinds, malicious attacks. You build a security system. You got a feedback loop. It's hackers. Hackers turn out to be smarter than your average noise or crosswind. Or you have, of course, in the product test lab, you have your beta tester, who is a disturbance. And guess what? As we work our way towards the end of this chapter, and this is, of course, what we've been working up to all along, right? I started out by saying, what about as it was in the days of Noah? Where's that in here? Well, let's go to chapter 6. We've already seen the process of creation. Give this creation, who's created in the image of Elohim, give him free will. The control theory we're still working on. And the self-selection, I contend, is not done yet. So free will plus control theory. We're seeing the control theory. We're working our way up to the self-selection. But uh-oh, got another big disturbance first. And I hope when we get this one laid out there, a lot of pieces will begin to kind of fall into place. Let's talk about what it says. It came to pass after men began to multiply on the face of the earth. So we've just seen a long list of all these descendants from Adam and the time spans, and they beget firstborns and then sons and daughters after that and live for a long, long time. And if people are living for a long, long time, and there's more and more of them, and you get what's called an exponential multiplication, it's pretty easy to go through the math and realize that by the time of Noah, there were probably not just thousands, but millions of people on Haaretz at that point. So men began to multiply on the face of the earth. Daughters were born to them. And we have another disturbance. Another, beta tester, maybe a more than polite way of saying it. Bunch of people. No, that's a problem. They're not really people. What are they? They're called sons of Elohim. If you note some of the other books that may or may not be part of Scripture, they're not called canonical, but Book of Enoch, for example, calls them the Watchers. And are you a good watcher or a bad watcher? We have, the Glinda, the allegedly good witch. Well, there are obviously watchers or bad things, fallen angels, call them what you will, that do things that they obviously, at least it seems, we're not told explicitly what their command set was, but it seems like they violated it. They saw these daughters of men. They were pretty good looking. They were attractive. There was an element, it would seem, of sexuality here. Maybe something else even beyond that. And they chose women. Now, the King James translations usually say wives. And I think wives is probably being a bit charitable, because it doesn't seem like these women had much choice in the matter. When it came to their free will, it was evidently violated. They chose whoever they felt like choosing. And it doesn't say any of the women were allowed to say no. It says the opposite. They were picked. That was it. And they bore whatever it was that came out of them as a result of this not their choice. Now, it was man, Adam, that's supposed to have a choice. He blew it. And now this is happening. Yeah, this is by any measure, this is another disturbance. This is crosswind. This is something else going on that, the system needed to be designed to correct. Now think about this. Now the Creator is going to have his hand in it. He still is, if you want to think of it in a product cycle, right? That too is a feedback loop. You build your product. You do your first test, your alpha test. It fails. Got to make a better one. The Mark II version, code version 2.0, better still. Let's test it. That's beta test. Alpha test followed by beta test. And then, then we'll see. And then we'll make our other revisions. Maybe eventually we got something that we're willing to sell to the general populace, the product that's ready for widespread release, ready for prime time. Here we have a major disturbance. Yahuwah says the following: My spirit's not going to abide in man forever, because he is flesh. So I'm going to limit his days, 120 years. Interesting. Then it says, Nephilim. Nephilim, we're in Ha Nephilim, we're in the earth in those days. And also after that, when the sons of Elohim came into the daughters of men and bore children to them. These were a.k.a. the mighty men of old. You might have heard the term the Titans, the men of renown. Maybe these were the Greek and Roman and Norse gods. Maybe, as we're probably going to be told soon, these are the invading aliens. Maybe these are the good aliens as opposed to the bad aliens. Process does seem to be kind of still in process, if we think about it in that respect. And I do think that's a major clue for the days of Noah part. Something is going on with the human genome here. These things, not humans, sons of Elohim, literally mated with, came into, chose women, whomever they wanted, and the output of that, the output of that later were called Rephaim. And a lot of folks get really upset about what we call which generation, right? The first thing, fallen angels, demonic, they're not really demonic forces. These are something else. They might be kind of those elements of the team Lucifer that we're talking about. The scripture is not real specific. We do have to kind of read a bunch of things, connect some dots. So I'm not going to claim that I know the final answer, but I do think the names are a clue. So we have sons of Elohim, we have Nephilim, later we have Raphaim that are the descendants. We know that people like Og of Bashan and others seem to have been of that ilk. And we know that the intent of the flood was to wipe them all out, but it didn't get them all, or somehow or other they came back. We're not told how that works either. But the disturbance was there, and it was again there later. Now, here's where I think the rubber meets the road. This is the key. Yahuwah saw the wickedness of man was great in Haaretz, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Think about that for a second. The concept seems to have been, I will create someone, a being, in my image and likeness. I'd like to walk with him in the cool of the garden. I got a plan. I've got my own motivations here for this creation. I created this whole world, literally, this universe, Ha'olam, Ha'aretz, and Ha'shamayim, the whole smash, and I gave man this creation in my image. I gave him dominion over all of that. And I also gave him free will, because I didn't want a walking, talking automaton, a Judy doll. That would have been easy and not much fun. So he has to have free will. And given that the choice to be and walk in obedience is also accompanied, definition of free will, by the chance to say, no, don't like this, don't want to have anything to do with you, oh Yahuwah, my creator, out of here. All right. There's this element of control theory. It's the feedback loop part that I'm working on. That's the complicated part, if you will. And the end goal is self-selection. Essentially, the way you build a filter, folks, is exactly the way you build a servo system, a control network. The whole process, in other words, is filtering. And we can even go through the math, and I can tell you what the characteristics of the filter is by looking at the math. You got high-pass filters, low-pass filters. Turns out you have mankind filters, too. What do I want? I want man who is going to be a suitable companion. What is it that's created for the man himself? An etzer kenegdo, a suitable helpmeet for him, someone complimentary for him. He is given all of the animals to go through a name in order to recognize, okay, I see there's a difference here. None of those, lions, tigers, and bears, oh my, none of those going to make it. I need this one. She's flesh of my flesh, bone of my bone. I like her. This will work. A suitable helpmeet. The Creator is looking, it would seem, again, this is my speculation, but certainly I think the totality of our experience helps us to understand this. He's looking for someone that he creates that he can walk in the cool of the garden with. He's looking for something in the way of, let's call it companionship, or an other than him. And it needs to have these characteristics, or it's just plain no fun. It needs to have free will, clearly. It needs to be able to accept or reject the chance to be his companion. Unlike what these sons of Elohim are doing to these women who didn't have a choice in the situation. We see the difference? So we evidently have a whole lot of folks during this time who are choosing evil. They're rejecting him. They're rejecting the whole plan. Every imagination of the thoughts of their hearts was evil continually. And this bugged him no end. He regretted, he grieved that he had made man on the ground. In this case, it doesn't say on the earth. It does say on the earth, actually, but out of the ground, too. Ha-Adam, out of the ground and on the earth. And it grieved him in his very heart. So he says, I'm going to blot him out. I've had it. Going to sand it all down and start over. This is a test that's failed, it would seem. Well, almost. Let's go back to verse 529. Son of a fellow named Lamech, Noach. Okay, he shall comfort us in our work and in the toil of our hands, which comes from Ha'adama, the ground which Yahuwah has cursed. Something really key in the plan, a difference, there's a big difference, here's the difference engine thing again, a selection process. Out of this entire stinking mess, there is essentially one, or if you will, one plus his family, that is going to be filtered out and that is going to continue. The Mark II version, the beta test product, Noach. And this is how the Torah portion ends. Noah, it says, found chen, grace in the eyes of Yahuwah. And it ends there. Now, we know what's going to happen. Not going to give away the story for next week. But there's going to be a more filtering process that goes on. He's going to sand it all down, flood them all out, and get rid of, arguably, the genetic pollution to the DNA. Yeah, I said it that way. There are a whole lot of folks that have been talking about, preaching, and making this point. I think it's a good one. What I find interesting about the genetic DNA hypothesis, right, that the problem with the Nephilim and essentially with the parental line of non-humans is that they're non-humans. And that, well, the DNA was polluted. Now, what's interesting, of course, is you can go back the last 2,000 years and say, why is it that this new understanding, you know, of an old doctrine fits today when it didn't fit 100 years ago? Answer, because we didn't know squat about DNA. Didn't understand anything about genetics, about the double helix. Didn't understand what it could be about these Nephilim and their parental line that might have polluted an entire race of humanity to the point where Elohim says, I want them out of here. Gone! That's not what I wanted. It's not what I created. I had this idea for man, created in my image. And you got something else here that is a pollution to that. Now, that explains how come a lot of folks get really upset about the various commandments to go into the land, right? The Canaanites, all these other folks, Amalekites and other ites, and just get rid of them. Now, some of the communities, you'll note that the people during the time of Joshua were told to go in and subdue. You don't kill them all. And yet, there are some where he says, I want every last man, woman, and child, even their cattle, out of here. Why? Well, I'm not saying this is the reason. I'm saying it makes a really good possible reason, though, that there was a genetic issue involved. Tainted DNA. These were not humans, if you want to put it bluntly. That, of course, raises a whole lot of questions that a lot of folks would just as soon not even talk about, and they would prefer to censor and you know, cut your socialist media access and your ability to even speak such things. Because how dare anybody make a difference anymore and suggest that the Creator might make a difference between folks that He wants in His creation and those that, honestly, He doesn't. Wow. They repented, Yahuwah, that He had even made man on the earth. He regretted it. He grieved. Grieved Him at His heart. He was pretty upset. I'm going to blot them all out. Man, women, beast, creeping thing, you name it. Fowl of the air. I'm sorry I did this. But no. Nope, we're going to filter. He's not given up on the plan, nor the feedback loop, nor the control theory. Noah and his sons and their wives, eight folks, going to do this, going to select also from the animals to continue on to the Mark II phase, you know, the version 2.0 of planet Haaretz. So let's go back at this point and say, okay, lots going on here. Hopefully we didn't get bogged down in any math. Tried to avoid the math. I think the feedback loop concept, though, is key. That there is there's a cosmic, if you will, or at least a Haaretz, an earth feedback loop, that's based on mankind. Got to give mankind free will so that he can, in fact, be mankind, created in the image of Elohim. I guarantee you one thing, folks. If he doesn't have free will, he's not created in the image. There may be other aspects to it. But if he's a walking, talking Judy doll, he ain't of the same, even remote, concept as the creator of the universe. So how do we get from where we are with free will to where he would like us to be? And yes, if you look at it in the time domain, if you look at it for, okay, here's what happened in Bereshit, here's what happened during the time of Moses and the Exodus, here's what happened later during the time of the kings, and during the time of the later exile, and the two wives, northern kingdom, southern kingdom, that are cast out, and then the 400-year gap, and then we get around to the time of Yahushua, who is what? The Torah made flesh, the Word made flesh, going to come to do what? If you think about it, feedback. Y'all are screwing this up big time. You keep adding to and subtracting from. You say you read it, but you don't. You've got your own so-called law, nomos, traditions of men, not what's written. By your traditions, Mark 7, you've made the commandments of Yah of no effect. In other words, you broke the feedback loop, guys. I put this stuff here. I put this word here for your blessing, for your instruction. You're not doing it. So the Torah made flesh comes to teach them. This is Matthew 5 through 7. What is written? You've heard it said? Nope. I'm going to tell you what it really says. And then he made the point in a redemption story that was arguably, since he knew the end from the beginning, all part of the really big process from the beginning, essentially to clean man up. But wait, you know what? There's still a choice element, right? Come all who will. It's always you can choose. You don't have to accept what he has done for us. You don't have to accept that redemption. You don't have to walk, if you love me, he says, keep my commandments. You still have free will. There's still a choice. There's still a feedback loop in place, and control theory is still working. What we're seeing is, and here's where it gets really complicated. You can do the math if you want. This is where you talk about, control theory 2, second order loops, right? I can take a feedback loop and I can, put a feedback loop around the feedback loop. And that's exactly what, if you look at the universe, even if you look at economics, you see feedback loops within feedback loops, right? You got feedback loops within corporations. Does a corporation make a profit or not? If it doesn't make a profit, it goes out of business. How about whole industries? Lots of corporations making similar products. Well, there's a bigger feedback loop. Sometimes whole industries do well or go bankrupt. How about bigger feedback loops still? Economies with dishonest weights and measures. Well, they tend to fail, and all the businesses, even if they were profitable, might go bankrupt in there. Feedback loops within feedback loops. People are essentially, we are in fact feedback loops. We are control systems. If somebody learns at a young age, put my hand on the fire, it hurts. Put my hand on the oven, it hurts. Don't do that anymore. There's a feedback loop. You know how literally everything we do, play the piano, there's a feedback loop. It's called muscle learning. You literally can train your hands to learn how to play the piano and guitar and similar things. Pilots see it. All right, I used to have to concentrate to land an airplane. And I find nowadays that my arms and my hands just plain know what to do. Crosswind comes automatically. Now, I think about the process, but my arms and hands are still working the rudder pedals and the elevator and the controls. And it just, the feedback loop does a whole lot of helping me reduce the workload. It's kind of like having an autopilot, but the Creator built it right into my own muscles. Isn't that cool? The point I'm trying to make is here, yes, if you look at the world, it is a very complicated, complex system. And there are lots and lots and lots of these feedback loops going on. And the beauty of the whole thing is the Creator gave us what we need to know in the Word. He wrote it down for us. Part of creation. We are created, literally, out of nothing by the Word. And the Word was made flesh, and it tabernacled among us. We have all of these indications of what's going on. But when you really step back and look at it, as a nerdy engineer would, it kind of fascinates me to see all of these control loops, these feedback loops, those he loves, he chastens. What's chastening? Yeah, it's negative feedback. That hurts. Don't do it. What is the pain system that he built into our bodies and into our emotional outlook? That hurts. Don't do it. There are all kinds of things in the very way we are built where you see these control loops and these feedback systems. It's part of why I talk about cycles and cycles within cycles. Cycles are a frequency domain way of looking at something as opposed to time domain. In other words, if you look at a cycle, it goes up, and then it peaks, and it goes down, and then it goes to the zero point, a pendulum swings to the bottom, and then it goes the opposite direction, and it gets to a peak, and it comes back, and then wash, rinse, repeat, right? It goes over and over and over again. But if I step back, I can look at the cycles and say, how long does that pendulum take to swing? It takes 1 second in the case of a clock. Tick, tock, tick, tock. Maybe it's 2 seconds, goes each way. But the point is, it's cyclical. I can look at what the pendulum does instant by instant, or I can look at it cycle by cycle. I can look at humanity the same way. I can look at the Bible as a series of stories laid out more or less chronologically, or I can look at them as a series of lessons laid out cyclically. Things that happen over and over and over again, and hopefully, eventually, cycles within cycles, we start to learn. We start to do what? Engage our free will, plus the control theory that he's built into the process, his word, the way we're made, the things that happen, if you will, the laws of nature and of nature's God, the way the universe is built. You reap what you sow, cycle after cycle, you begin to see the picture, and the result is self-selection. So, as we start to think, let's go back again. I ask this question, what does it mean? Right out of, this turns out to be Matthew chapter 24, verse 37. As it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be. Well, we've already touched on some of this. And I think the oversimplified example is, there is obviously some genetic nastiness going on, a disturbing influence. These sons of Elohim taking all the good-looking women that they feel like and impregnating them and creating Nephilim and other things. And wickedness abounds. What does the Creator say in Matthew 24? Well, Torahlessness abounds, too, at the time we're talking about. That's another similarity. So we got at least a couple of things about this as it was in the days of Noah that start to look familiar. A, got lots of people. B, got lots and lots of wickedness. Torahlessness abounds. Every imagination of the heart, evil continually. We got some genetic nastiness going on. Is it just possible that that's going on today too? Yeah. Is there more? I'm going to suggest there's a whole lot more. And it has to do with, those big two lies. You can be like God and you will not die. Is there a move, for example, to say we can transfer your consciousness into a machine? Well, at least we can transfer Bill Gates' consciousness into a machine. He's got lots of money. And Ray Kurzweil and some of the other people. You know the names, right? The big socialist media, billionaires and so on. Maybe we'll let them translate their consciousness into to something. Or maybe they'll just create a hell on Earth, and you can, if you want to, you can self-select for that. Don't like the planet you got here? Yeah, go for the one that the alternative guy built for you. There's a verse that talks about there'll a time when men will seek death and they won't find it. I can't help but think, guess what we might be talking about there? Is that yet another indication of the, as it was in the time of Noah, so shall it be? Perhaps. I want to do just a couple of quick stories to help illustrate the point. Are we there yet? Is this the time of Noah? Are there some big lies? Is this idea of the wickedness of man great in the earth and the imagination of their hearts just kind of evil continually? Here's a story from the organic prepper. Meadow Clark wrote it. It's not like I haven't seen this before, but this is timely, and it fits, and it sets up. Doesn't really go. It sets up where I want to go next. New York Times is reporting, I'm going to say lying, yellow journalists are claiming 80,000 Americans died from the flu last winter. Highest death toll yet. I'm going to say it this way, folks. Is the word crock, is that polite? A polite way to describe this? Says the author, these are thinly veiled attempts to push Americans into the vaccine regime. Get your flu shots or you're going to die. Fear, panic, hysteria. And yes, Big Brother's Big Pharma wants to sell you a lot of this crap. They're going to tell you, you can't trust God. You can't believe that you're fearfully and wonderfully made. You have an immune system, folks, that it is an incredible masterpiece of, feedback, loop, control theory design. We got multiple systems, and these are... To imagine that they evolved out of chance. Feedback loops don't evolve out of chance. Feedback loops are put together. Anyway. You must have this vaccine or you will die. No, these systems that you have, leukocytes and white blood cells and all these other things, your immune system. We've pretty well mucked that up for years. We've got all kinds of other things. Matter of fact, we've got genetically modified things that are affecting this. I look at the vaccine argument and think this is probably one of the quintessential examples of bogus science today. Did you know, says the author, that the University of Medical Research is genuinely and generally, like massively, brought to you by Big Pharma? Think about how much power these entities wield. If they can control not only the flow of information, but the way it's perceived. Turns out if you are injured or die from a vaccine, you know, or at least you ought to know, you cannot sue the vaccine makers. They got immunity. They got immunity from failing to provide you with immunity that God already provided you with if you just let His creation do the work that they're telling you you don't need. You can't sue the medical practitioners either. Isn't it wonderful? They will downplay the fact that the numbers of fetal deaths that occurred after flu vaccines were deemed safe for pregnant women increased something on the order of 4,250%. What interested me about this whole article was the piece where the author says, hey, have you noticed how they try to sell you this? They call it herd immunity. You must get your vaccine or you're killing other people too, you bad, evil person, you. Well, folks, herd immunity is scientific crap. Let me say it this way. I've mentioned this before. If vaccines worked as supposedly, if they worked as they were sold, and if the flu vaccine purveyors were godlike in their omnipotence, and they said, okay, all of the millions of kinds of flus that it could be, H5N2, H2N1, H34N5200, well, if all of those, if we could pick divinely inspired, which were the 5 or 6 flu strains that were going to, go like crap through a goose through the human population next flu season, and we just immunized against those, well, then herd immunity, there wouldn't be any problem. Well, then what? The engineer in me says, well, wait a minute, I know how testing works. A good tester will say, well, then those aren't the ones we're going to pick. We'll send another one. The disturbance, the way the creation works. Well, that would mean if herd immunity worked as it's advertised, the flu that in fact spreads like wildfire isn't going to be one of the ones that you immunize folks against. It's going to be a different one. In other words, if you have a house that's got 3 doors, and you're stupid enough to say, well, I can only protect one door, I'm going to put all of my forces at the front door, any smart, intelligent flu is going to go around and invade via the back door. It's going to go a different way. Any product tester worth his salt, as we used to say, will find the back door. Come in that way. So if herd immunity worked, and the vaccines worked, and they were omnipotent, there'd never be a problem. But what do we see? Well, it's always the flu virus that people aren't vaccinated against that gets them. And, of course, here's the problem. While your body is fighting off building antibodies for a vaccine it's never going to see because herd immunity, you know, that means you're more vulnerable to the others. They don't tell you about any of this jazz. What they do tell you is, get your flu shot. The author makes a great point. What? My flu shot? Why are you telling me it's my flu? I don't want it. It's not my flu shot. I ain't going to get it. I'm too smart for that. It's like saying, pay your taxes. Well, if they were my taxes, I wouldn't have to pay anything. Voluntarily, anyway. No, it's not your flu shot. It's something they're trying to foist on you, and there's the big difference. Nevertheless, why did I do this story? To set this one up. A team of scientists have sounded the alarm in a new Science Policy Forum, a report, about a mysterious, aren't they all, black, well, at least dark, U.S. government program coming from DARPA, the Pentagon's Defense Advanced Research Project Agency. These are the ones that are building you the Terminator drone swarms. You think Arnold was bad? T-1000 killer robot? Nah, nothing. They got swarms of killer drones. Imagine, folks, if there had been a Terminator robot instead of an Arnold that was, a swarm of 1,000 little killer drone flies that just dispersed, can't hit them with a shotgun, and then just kind of killed everybody they wanted simultaneously. Movie over, game over, show over. That's what DARPA's working on. But no, there's more. They're working on this, too. They're ready for this, and I love the way they name these programs. This is called Insect Allies. Uh-oh, suppose there were insect enemies. Is that possible? All right, the program's called Insect Allies. It's about developing an entirely new class of bioweapons. And the scientists, the authors of this report, who aren't buying it, suggested that just maybe other nations might similarly seek to do what? Evil continually. To produce these things. The researchers from the Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Biology at the University of Freiburg in Germany and also at the University of Montpellier in France, suggests the DARPA program could probably be a break, a breach, a violation of the Biological Weapons Convention, which bans development, production, stockpiling of biological and toxin weapons. Anyway, the insect allies, as Big Brother calls it, began modifying insects, allegedly, in 2017. I'm kind of wondering if they didn't do it before that and just not tell us. Anyway, the plan is to produce, they say, more resilient crops to help farmers deal with, what, non-existent climate change, among other things. Frost, drought, flood, salinity, disease, anything that they are having a problem with, not to worry, we can fix it. How do we do this? Well, feedback loops? No, we're going to develop something entirely new. Instead of, get this, this is the part, instead of just modifying the seeds in a lab, kind of like, what does it say? These bad guys chose wives, whomsoever they choose. Instead of doing that genetic modification, the boinking of insects in a lab, yeah, I said it, they're going to be able to do it en masse. Out in the wild, farmers would be able to send swarms of friendly insect allies into their crops, where the genetically modified frankenbugs, I put that in there, would infect plants with a virus that changes their DNA. Okay, we got bugs, friendly bugs, going out and changing friendly plants with a virus that modifies their DNA. Passing along the new, improved, God didn't make them this good genes in a process known as horizontal genetic alteration. Matter of fact, that's why they call the technology HEGA. Stands for Horizontal Environmental Genetic Alteration Agents. Insect allies. Now, suppose you have HEGA enemies. I would suggest that what these things ought to be called, folks, real simple, Terminator bugs. But we're just getting started. There's some of the foils, some of the product goals that are in here. And I think this comes from the paper. I'm not sure where these... It doesn't give a credit for where these come from. But it says, solution, problem, right? Problem is God's creation. And he even warned us, right? Herbs would be great. They would propagate according to their own kind. But there's going to be some problems coming out of Ha-Adama, thorns and thistles and stuff like that. It's going to be work. Not to worry, we can fix it. You can be like God, you will not die. Solution to God's infestation of the Ha-Adama with things we don't like. Insects carrying plant viruses can be evolved to, I love this, well, I don't really love this, but I'll read it, feed on specific plants. Okay, all right, we can create special insects to feed on specific plants. Feed on specific tissues. Say what? Now, when I saw that, I kind of went, going to feed on specific tissues and have dynamic relationships with their viral community. All right, now, as an engineer who's done product development and who recognizes that if you don't plan for an eventuality, right, if I produce a product, and I've done this, okay, I've had a, we sent a large tape drive system years ago. It's, you know, it was probably in my engineering career, the thing I worked the longest on and went literally from design and inception, almost at the beginning, all the way through product release and then the next version of the product, the follow-on product, and all this kind of jazz. Because one thing I learned, you send a product out to the field, and it's got a software bug in it, okay? And I remember my management. I say, look, we can't release this because it's gonna, you know, there's a bug here, and the customer's gonna find this bug, and they're gonna complain, and it's gonna come back to us right away. And the management says what, right? You've heard this. There's a time to shoot the engineers and ship the product. Shut up! All right, so we ship the product. You know how long it was till we got the first problem reports from the field? One day. Very first day. Got them. It's a, they call it a class one. It was a severity one problem. Whoa! Why didn't you tell that? Oh, I did tell you. Okay. Got to fix the problem. We worked day and night for I don't remember how long to fix this problem. Now, later on, there was another bug, and I saw this bug in the lab and said, you know, this bug can't happen but one time in 100 million tape reads. It'll probably take a week before this one comes back. And that was another SEV1. And that was a good one, because fixing that one was really tough. But the point is, look, folks, if the engineer can conceive that there's a problem, you are going to see it in the field. Absolutely, positively guaranteed. So if I look at this and I say, you've got something you're designing to feed on specific plants and feed on specific tissues, you call it an insect ally, is it just possible we might have a Sev1 problem when it starts feeding on other plants and other tissues that you didn't want it to? And you don't have a feedback loop in place to kill the damn things? Ooh. Yeah, insect enemies. I guarantee you, if you produce insect allies, there are going to be some insect enemies come along. And my gut feel is the Terminator movies, right, candy-coated the situation. So here we go. Gizmodo explains that the DARPA labs develop a virus that's inserted into the chromosome of the target organism. Scientists like leafhoppers, white flies, and aphids, and they're altering them in the lab using CRISPR. If you've heard about CRISPR, it's a gene-altering tool or something like it, and it carries the virus into crops. What could possibly go wrong? Each plant would then be infected by the insect, triggering the intended effects of protecting crops from natural or human-made threats. You're going to protect crops from human-made threats? You think you can build a antivirus system for your computer that will protect it from all hackers? You're a stinking idiot. There are going to be people out there that will hack it. Hasn't anybody learned anything from watching what's going on with the web and hacking and viruses and phishing and you name it? Good grief, folks. This is beyond stupid. See here. And Yahuwah saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was evil continually. You can be like God. You can create better stuff than he did. You can produce better evolution. Back to what the story says. Now, the scientist here, Richard Guy Reeves from the Department of Evolutionary Genetics at the Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Biology, the lead author of the report, said, I love this, DARPA's Insect Allies program he found to be disturbing. And, however, it was also an example of what they call dual-use research for the U.S. government. Now, this is easy, folks. This is selling BS 101. Here is why you want my new product. It also does this, but I'm not going to tell you. Okay? You farmers want my new genetically engineered insect friends, friendly insects. I, on the other hand, would like to develop insect enemies. I'll sell the insect allies to the farmers. I'll sell the insect enemies to, well, other enemies. This is the same week, folks, where Communist China has been caught doing what some of its engineers knew 20 years ago they were darn well going to do. And that is not just bug the hardware with software bugs, but hardware bugs, too. Those are harder to find. Well, it turns out it took years. The Obama regime put them in there or allowed them via either benign neglect or maybe a bribe or a bunch of them. Or maybe it was put up on an open email server. Who knows, folks? So much treason. And they're now surprised that the Chinese have managed to infiltrate all kinds of high-level security information systems and servers to the very hardware level. And I'm saying, come on. You'd be idiots not to know that that was the plan from the get-go. And you intend to allow insect allies to be produced without knowing that the Pentagon is also going to have a dark program that's called Insect Enemies? What could possibly go wrong? All right. Gizmodo said there's four academic research teams currently working on the product, but the DARPA folks aren't just doing insect allies. The lead author says, in addition to aiding farmers' crops, there's also, almost certainly, they can't prove it, but they know it's there, and so do we, a biological weapons program. Bloody, bloody, blah. Not to worry, says DARPA. These are only done inside closed labs and greenhouses. I got a greenhouse. Anything possibly ever get in your greenhouse? I'm looking at the other fellow in the room here. Or get out of your greenhouse? It could happen. Yeah, it could happen. But not to worry. The insects have built-in lifespans to limit their spread. And eventually, they're going to test them in a wider environment in, ready, undisclosed locations. Reeves said, this is the author of the report, the use of insects as a vehicle for genetic modification is kind of a horrible idea to begin with, because they can't be controlled. And he indicates that traditional overhead sprays to deliver these, agents that you want to control crops might be a better bet. DARPA, though, says insects are the only practical solution. Because, there's just not enough infrastructure to do this. What they want to build, folks, is a self-replicating biological weapon. And nevertheless, the report says there's no global regulatory framework. Oh, yeah, that'll fix it. And what could happen would be potential mishaps. Now, all I can add to that is, gee, you think? The scientists also report that you could certainly look at DARPA's insect program and say that it has, quote, an intention to develop a means of delivery of HEGAs for offensive purposes, i.e. biological warfare. And these genetically modified Frankenbugs could be implemented with a dangerous plant-killing disease. It would be easy that a bad regime in Washington, for example, could unleash over farmland. Not to worry, it'll be far away. Venezuela, Syria, Iran, North Korea, Russia, or even China, that would decimate the country's food supply. What could possibly go wrong? Could these things get out of control and come to Texas, or North Dakota, or California? Well, I guess if a few million people die, hey, that's the price of progress, right? They could be considered WMDs, it says. DARPA, though, says not to worry. Quote, DARPA is not producing biological weapons, and we reject the hypothetical scenario. Gee, have they ever lied to us before? A professor at North Carolina State University, expert in genetic engineering, Jason Delborn, says the concern, though, does seem appropriate to him. The social, ethical, political, and ecological implications of producing HEGAs are significant and worthy of the same level of attention as exploring the science underpinning the potential technology. He says the authors of this report argue persuasively that insects being the preferred delivery mechanism is poorly justified. And, when it comes to spraying agricultural fields, we know pretty much how that works. But this delivery mechanism would certainly be better, offer better control over the potential of what they're talking about doing here. All right. Well, says Zero Hedge, summarizing all of this, this looks like the future of warfare, folks. And I can't argue with at least some of that. Now, as I mentioned this piece, right, I'm still trying to answer the question. What does it mean when it says, as it was in the time of Noah, so will it be when all this other bad stuff hits the fan? And already, as you know, and there was a big conference, a technical conference that a lot of folks in the alternative press are aware of. Steve Quayle and some other folks put it on in Branson here not long ago. They had some high-profile speakers talking about artificial intelligence, which, if you remember, the late Stephen Hawking said was the most significant, devastating, existential threat to all of humankind that he could imagine. Let me say it again. You can be like God. You will not die. Doesn't that sound a lot like creating an AI, an artificial intelligence, that could control everything? If we gave it the Internet of Things, if we put all this poisonous 5G millimeter wave technology out there, which kills some biological entities, but hey, at least we can control them up until then, because if we crank up the level a little bit, we can cause them to think they're on fire, that they're literally burning alive at their skin. What a wonderful control mechanism. This is a different kind of control theory, folks, I'm talking about here, although the math, as it turns out, is the same. So you have AI with the Internet of Things and 5G. All of this is not just science fiction. This is work in progress. This is stuff that I can tell you, from a background in advanced tech at IBM decades ago, is closer. Let me say this carefully. This is closer to being released on a benignly ignorant world than we would have been when we had a new product design that was 2 years away from being able to be delivered. This stuff is real. In other words, this is a technology that is not speculative. It already exists. It's been demonstrated. Could it be like the Terminator? Again, I'll say it. The Terminator movies are valuable. Take a look at them, right? They're prophetic in that sense. And the problem is they candy coat the real situation. I kid you not. Arnold Schwarzenegger and the T-1000 robot, the killer Terminator robot, is penny ante stuff compared to what DARPA has already demonstrated. Have you ever seen the fireworks displays that aren't fireworks? They're little drone swarms with LEDs. Have you seen those? They exist, okay? You can send computer-controlled swarms of little quadcopter drones flying, and they got an LED on them, and they will fly in formation, and you turn on the different lights on them with a computer program. You can produce flags and animals and all this kind of stuff. They'll fly in formation and produce great light shows. It's cool. But suppose instead of a little LED, you use the exact same technology. Now, this is not difficult. If I can think of it, I guarantee you DARPA has not only thought of it, they got the prototypes. Nope. They got the product delivered version, past beta testing, already out in the field. And it's being beta tested in the field. It's beyond beta testing, really. Now, in some war theater, probably Syria or Iran or you name it, Afghanistan. That's the reason why you got to have all these good wars. You can test all kinds of good stuff. And if it's a successful test, nobody survives to tell about it. The point is, you take your swarms of little LED carrying drones and just put a little charge, a little bit of C4 on there, or better still, some kind of a biotoxin, a heart attack drug, and you can send a swarm of them in through a window, kill somebody quietly. And, of course, in the lands where Arkansides are kind of, yawned at anyway, who's the wiser? Technology after technology. We've got AI, we've got 5G, we've got Internet of Things all working together. We've got the GMOs. Go back and look at your history. Remember the centaur from ancient Greek and Roman mythology? Half man on a man's upper torso on the body of a horse, right? Oh, bizarre thing. You don't think that could be produced in the lab today with genetic engineering? If we can send viruses in to be animal and plant enemies and engineer them to eat tissues, why the heck not? What I'm suggesting, of course, is that we already look and see on more than one front a number of technologies, a whole number of technologies that literally make what was going on in the days of Noah kind of look pretty pale by comparison. You got these bad guys, watchers, a.k.a. sons of Elohim, out basically doing whatever they want with any women that they want. Nowadays, of course, they would be boys, girls, it's transvestites, transsexuals, and who knows what's doing it with them, too. And no, they don't have a choice, especially if it's a liberal that wants to rape them. On the other hand, if it's a guy who wants to be on the Supreme Court and he's claiming to be a conservative, well, you know, it doesn't matter what he did, we'll make something up. But as for those that are in positions of being the watchers, the sons of Elohim, the godlike ones, well, they can take wives or whatever from whoever they choose. Me too. And they'd better not talk about it. Right, Sarah? Right, Kathleen? Right, all those women that came forward and said, Bill Clinton raped me, Bill Clinton did this? Well, they didn't get any press. We just had a circus in Washington. Can we believe that there would be men and others, it's, in positions of power and authority that could take whomever they chose? Could they be pedophilia-oriented? Could they have the ability to produce sex slaves? And we're already told this is the biggest trade. This is the biggest trade on planet Earth in terms of dollar volume, bigger than the drug trade. Little boys, little girls, and little who-knows-whats being inducted for, well, human sex slavery up to and including human sacrifice. Is that really evil? You betcha. Is it satanic? It's the very definition of witch. Is it involved with sending children through the fire to Molech? Can we see all kinds of things in Scripture that sound a lot like what's been, well, not even talked about, but that certainly keeps people quiet when it comes to things that, well, you can talk about Me Too, but you can't talk about that. Do I believe that there are human clones already in the labs? I'd say we'd be fools not to know that it's been done. How about other kinds of chimeras? Half this, half that. Well, we've got genetically modified tomatoes, folks, with spider genes. Genetically modified Franken crops. Corn that is not an herb that produces seed according to its own kind, with Monsanto's Terminator gene in them. The corn, the soybeans, the other Franken crap that they're selling that is not food that God made. It's not really food at all, therefore. Well, it doesn't reproduce. Guess what? It's already out of the lab. It's already polluting farm fields. One of the advantages, I would suggest, of being out here in the middle of the boondocks, where we don't have all kinds of neighboring farms because it's not considered great farmland, is at least I don't have to have, yet, Franken crops drifting in the wind and destroying my garden. I do think we're going to have to worry about these insect enemies coming and doing precisely that, however. So let me just kind of wrap this element up this way. All kinds of bad stuff going on. We were warned, Matthew 24:37, as it was in the days of Noah, so will it be at this time that we're talking about. Are we there yet? I'll read it and ask. We've just given a few examples. We could do an hour just on the news this week of things that are, I will say it, outright satanic. I've already played it. I'll play it again later. A little brief technical review of the 5G menace. It's a weapon of mass destruction that is being deployed even as we speak. 5G is being rolled out. Millimeter wavelength technology. Now, has this been tested? Do we know what the biological effects are? We're told two things. No, we don't. The testing hasn't been done. Nobody wants to do the testing. Why? Well, because there's trillions of dollars with a T at stake here. Why would Verizon or Cellular One or AT&T or Apple or any of the other manufacturers of cell phone towers and equipment that stand to make trillions of dollars and also have government contracts and all kinds of other stuff, why would they even remotely want to do testing that would only possibly have one result? To wake people up to say no. Well, then don't do the testing. Don't test it if you already know the answer. And guess what? The military already knows the answer. These things are called active denial systems. They use the very same wavelengths, 10 to 100 gigahertz, much, much higher than current microwave cell frequencies. They use these same things in active denial systems, weapons that have been developed and are in the field to cause incredible pain. You can shine one of these waves with a directed waveguide over a population, and they will want to get the hell out of there because they will believe their skin is on fire. Well, let's put one of these on every street corner. Let's let people download their movies faster. And as long as we keep the power level low enough where they don't think their skin is on fire, maybe it'll just cause insomnia and destroy their immune systems and mess with their genetics by breaking DNA chains and cause their children to have birth defects. But hey, who knows? By that time, we don't care anyway. We'll have made the bucks. Yahuwah saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his hearts was only evil continually. And it bugged him no end that he had ever made man to begin with. Grieved him at his heart, and he said, I'll blot this guy out. I'll blot this creature out from the face of the earth. Both man and beast, creeping thing, fowl and air. Why all of the fowls of the air, the creeping things? Well, look at what's going on today. Look at what's going on today. How about if some insect allies became insect enemies? And crops are genetically modified Franken crap. And besides which, the earth has been pretty well polluted anyway, and they're telling people, be afraid, be very afraid of things that we've done by introducing vaccines and all kinds of scientific pseudo-crap like man-made global warming. Be afraid of that, rather than the stuff that we are in fact doing to you while you are in ignorance of exactly how evil we really are. And then look at Hollywood and ask yourself, what's being delivered? What's being sold? And this is something I've talked about for a long time. I think it's obvious. If the Creator says, a man lying with a man is with a woman, is it an abomination? It carries a death penalty. Don't do it. What does Hollywood say? What does the Supreme Court say? We'll license it. We'll subsidize it. We'll mandate it. And if you don't like it, you can go to the hell on earth we're building for you and teaching your children to love. The wickedness of man was great in the earth, and every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And if it wasn't yet, they got a control loop in place to make sure that by the time your kids come out of the indoctrination centers, they'll love it. I guess maybe it's obvious what my opinion is at this point. If I look at that line about as it was in the days of Noah, I have a really tough time convincing myself that Noah and his time got anything on what Washington and Beijing and Hollywood are currently having, developing, and in plan. The beta tests are done, folks. They're unleashing the final products on a gullible, dumbed-down, God-hating humanity. And I guess this is the good news and the bad news. We're going to see the plan come to fruition. The good plan, the bad plan. I have no doubt about it. Concluded. That when you step back and you see what the scriptures say, here I go back to the control theory, right? We're going to do the one brief visit to the math again. The autopilot, the control structure, GH over 1 plus GH, that's as close as we get to the math, all right? You have a desired output, what? A man, Ha-Adam, mankind. Give this creation free will. Put in place feedback mechanisms, control theory, the loops to say, all right, we do have to train our children in the way that they should go. We do have to bring them up. The man who loves his child will, in fact, chasten him. What? Negative feedback. You do something wrong, there's pain. If you do good, well, will you not be rewarded? Will you not be lifted up? Right smack out of Genesis, Bereshit. It's consistent. I will contend here, folks, that the goal, the end, is clear. And here's the part where there's more to it than just say the prayer, get your get-out-of-hell-free card. Because the goal of the adversary is to what? Kill and destroy. Take as many with him as he can. I have no doubt that what we're seeing in so many respects with this AI and with the idea of alternatives and alternative lifestyles and alternative choices, and now we have sex bot brothels, you heard about this, and sex bot AIs and all kinds of other things. If you can imagine it, folks, the plan is deliver it to you. You have a fantasy? You want to rape children? Well, you know, that might get you in trouble up until we get the laws changed. But you can go to, I guarantee you, from what I've read about Japan, I can't prove this, certainly don't want to go there myself, but you can go to AI places, put on some goggles, and you can experience anything you can imagine, and probably a whole lot of things you can't, but people are still willing to pay for. Is it that much of a leap to say if that can be done now with artificial environments and virtual realities that we can eventually transplant people into a real, quote-unquote, but virtual reality? They're already talking about hive cities where people live in little teeny things that are already present in Japan, literally just nothing but little tubes. You go in there, you got a bed and a TV and, you know, maybe some feeding tubes or something. Or maybe you go out if you're still wanting to do that once in a while. What? Matrix. Yeah, I'm describing the Matrix is what I'm being told here locally. You betcha. We've been warned. Hollywood, right? You know the story. I've mentioned this before. Amos says, Yahuwah does nothing but what he first declares his intentions to his servants, the prophets. And, of course, Ahasuerus plays by the same rules. He does nothing but what he first declares his intentions through his servants, Hollywood. And we've seen it. So we've been warned about these things. In any case, it's not that much of a leap to say, I can imagine, and I know that it's already being beta tested. Complete virtual reality immersion environments where people live, breathe, eat, sleep in this virtual reality. It is, in fact, the Matrix. And if there was a bug in there or a hacker in there and something happened to that universe, I can't but imagine that, the place in the scripture where it says people will want to die but they won't find it, easy to believe. They're creating a literal hell on earth and going to let people choose to be there. There are no doubts in my mind that this wickedness of man is great in the earth. perhaps we're heading to a climax of biblical proportions. I have difficulty, as you know by now, arguing against that. But here's the point. This is literally the title and the end, the goal of what I've been trying to wrap all of our heads around today. This idea that free will plus control theory literally is the plan of creation, if you will, from a frequency domain standpoint. In other words, not looking at it instant by instant, epoch by epoch on the time domain. What happens? We always want to know, well, where are we now? What's happening next, right? But cycles repeat. I am suggesting that the goal of creation, the point of free will, and Scripture's laid it out for us, is for us as individuals to self-select. As for me and my house, I will serve Yahuwah and Him alone. Ultimately, it's that simple. Ultimately, it's been right there, right? Just like you've had the power all along, like the ruby slippers. It's always been there. It's self-selection. Choose this day whom you will serve. Trouble is, we've been fed a lie. We've been taught another Jesus whom we have not preached, wrote Paul. We've been taught false messiahs. There'll be lots and lots of Christs, we were warned. Don't believe him. He's over here, he's over there, he's everywhere. No, don't believe him. If he is telling you that the Torah is done away with, he's a liar. If he's telling you, don't keep my commandments, he's a liar, and the truth is not in him. If you love me, keep my commandments. If you love me, self-select. If you love me, just follow. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do the things I say? He's never changed it, not from the beginning. The goal was always to take a creation made in His image and say, here you go. It's real simple. Just choose. Just choose to walk in obedience. Choose blessing. Choose life. And you will have it. Why did he come, says John 10:10? I have come that they might have life and have it in abundance. I don't know how it works out for all of those that self-select death. Well, actually we do, right? But I don't know the specifics. Honestly, I'm not sure I want to know. I can imagine a million grisly ways to produce a hell on earth or a hell in wherever. My goal, right? Our goal, I pray for all of us, is to hear those words, well done, thou good and faithful servant. But ultimately, it's even simpler than that. Now, I believe there's an extra blessing, right? Enter into your rest for those of us that are not only just walking in obedience, but actually attempting as best we can to do His will and to be that good and faithful servant. But still, the simple process, complex as it may seem in a universe that He created for us with lots and lots of feedback loops and lots of individuals and lots of free will, is still free will plus control theory, so that each of us can self-select. Each of us can be filtered, screened via the feedback process to whatever's next. Whatever's next. Well, that sounds a new heaven and a new earth. There's all kinds of really interesting stuff at the end. Does he rewrite the physical constants and laws of creation at the point when the earth and the heavens really do pass away and things are, if you will, melted down and we get to see what's next? I'm looking forward to that. I think it'll be really interesting. It'll be another set of challenges. But it still all boils down to free will plus control theory, self-selection. So my charge for everyone that hears this is choose. Choose this day whom you will serve. Choose life that you might have it in abundance. Choose it through Him. He is the Torah, the instruction, the Word. We're created literally out of nothing via His Word. And it sounds almost too simple, and ultimately it almost really is. It's just that when you go through the math, it can look really complicated. And indeed it kind of is. But it still boils down to that simple choice. Each of us, as an individual, has a choice. I look at this element in Genesis, these sons of Elohim. They saw these good-looking women, and they chose. The wives didn't have a choice. Folks, that right there nails it. How about 5G? We're going to have a choice? Well, if you live in a big city, you're not going to have a choice. They're going to put these towers outside your home. They're going to irradiate your children. They're going to poison your dog and your cat with millimeter waves. Will you know about it? Well, you won't be told. Are they invisible? Yeah. Quiet? Maybe you won't sleep as well at night. You won't be able to turn it off. Maybe you'll find that you have cancers and melanomas and other little things that you're going to be told. Just like with the vaccines. You can't sue the vaccine manufacturers. Guess what? Oh, I guarantee you, there'll eventually be immunity from persecution or prosecution for all the evil people who perpetrated this trillion-dollar death weapon of mass destruction on people. But if you're in these places, you won't have a choice. Do you have a choice now? Well, right now we have a choice. Come out of her and be separate. The filtering process is still in process. Now, here's the key. Okay, I've done the best I can at saying free will plus control theory, self-selection. But lots of slip twixt the cup and the lip. Here we are today. We look out and we go, yeah, literally does look like this time of Noah is upon us. Men are particularly evil. Lots of really wicked stuff coming down from insect enemies to 5G to artificial intelligence that will control God-like, but not everything, so that people won't have a choice. Well, what do we do then? What do we do until then? A, do the best we can. Choose life. Come out of her, my people. Be separate. Touch not the unclean thing. Whole lot of unclean things around. Lots of choices not to touch those. We can walk in obedience. We can self-select now. Does that mean I know what each individual, what my ultimate end is going to be? How that? No, I don't know how it all works out. I just know that step by step along the way, in the time domain, I have to make the choice. Minute by minute. Walk in obedience. Veer neither to the right nor to the left. All of these things are written down for us. And it really is. It's simple. Doesn't have to require us to go up to heaven and have somebody bring it down. The Torah is pretty straightforward. There are things we can do now. There's things we shouldn't do now. And there's things that we have to simply trust in Him, knowing that His word is true. Right? Abraham did the same thing. Multiple tests in his life. We are each of us going to face multiple tests. And they're all about, ultimately, can we or can we not walk in obedience? Are we or are we not the kind of people who would want and who He would want to be companions? Many will say to me in that day, Matthew 7:23, Lord, Lord, didn't we do all this stuff? Didn't we cast out demons in Your name and in Your name do all this really cool stuff? Depart from me, He said. You are workers of Torah-lessness. You workers of iniquity, lawlessness. I never knew you. In the verse after, the one that I've already read today, Matthew 24, right? The day and the hour no one knows. But as in the days of Noah, so will the coming of the Son of Man be. There's going to be a... some will be, what's the term? Taken away? No. What was the big book by the Lahays? Beam me up, Scotty.
Rapture.
Yeah, the crapture, but there was another term for it. Left behind. Left behind. That was the name of the series. Well, guess what, folks? Noah was left behind. The others were the ones that were taken away. Shellacked, sent out, exiled. I'd rather be left behind. Two men will be in the field. One will be taken, the other left. Two women grinding at the mill. One will be taken and the other left. Watch, because you don't know what hour your Adon is coming. But if you had, I guarantee you, if the master had known what hour the thief would come, he wouldn't allow his house to be broken into. Therefore, be ready, because he's coming at an hour you don't expect. Here we go. Who then is a wise and faithful servant, whom his master has made ruler of his house to give him food in due season? Blessed is that servant when his master, when he comes, will find him doing. In other words, be overcomers, stand, having done all to stand. It's repeated in a bunch of different ways, but it all boils down to the same thing. Do what you're supposed to be doing, where you're supposed to be doing it, in obedience to your master until he comes. You don't know when. Just be ready. Assuredly, I say to you, he'll make him ruler over all his goods. That evil servant, though, that says in his heart, my master ain't coming when I expect him to. He begins to beat his fellow servants, eat, drink with his drunkards. The master of that servant will come on a day when he's not looking for him, and an hour that he's not aware of. Hey, especially if he's not keeping his moedim, right? He doesn't even know that if he came the first time to fulfill the spring feast, maybe the second time, the fall feast. That's all done away with, we're told, by the liars and the evil men. Well, the master comes on that day when he didn't expect him. He will cut him in two, and appoint his portion along with the hypocrites. Yeah, you go out and hang out with those other hypocrites, the ones who said the law's done away with. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Maybe in a virtual domain, who knows? We are, folks, in the middle of an incredible... It's incredible to us because it's so complicated we can't quite wrap our hands around it, but the answer for us is simple. That's the beauty of it. Walk line by line, precept by precept, through the winnowing process, the filtering process, the screening process, the feedback and chastening process, cycle after cycle if we have to, so that we can hear, well done, good and faithful servant, enter into my rest, and go to the next level, right? Be there to watch the things that he has planned for us. And one thing I know, I can read the prophecies, we all can, but the one thing I know is it'll be better than we can possibly imagine to actually see it and do it. So that would be my prayer for each of us. Let us pray. Yahuwah Eloheinu, Yahuwah Echad. Abba, we thank you that you have created us, that you spoke Ha'olam, the world, Ha'aretz, Ha'shemayim. You spoke all of it, everything we can imagine and things that we can't. You spoke all of that into existence. And that you created all of these things and that they were good. And that you put man in the garden and it was tov meod, very good. And we know what happened next, kind of. We don't know the details, but we know enough to understand that there was a failure. And we know the parameters of the failure, and you've written about it, and we can read it and study it. And we know that we're still here in exile, and that we still have tests to pass, and that there is still a filtering process going on, and that you still have a plan, and that we're still watching it play out. So, Father, we pray that we would be good and faithful servants, that we would be where we need to be, where you would have us. Each of us as individuals in this time that lies ahead, that we would be found doing your work when you return, that we would be ready for the harvest, that in short we would be able to choose life and have it more abundantly through you, and that you would choose us and know us. We thank you for the things you've done for us, and we pray that we would continue to be able to do the things we need to do as long as you would have us do them, and that we would be ready. And that we would be patient and wait on you. And that above all, again, we would be good and faithful servants. For we declare before you, Abba, that as for me and my house, we choose to serve you, Yahuwah. You are our King, our Master, our Redeemer, our Savior, our Mashiach. You are Yahuwah Rapha, Yahuwah Nisi, Yahuwah Zediknu, Yahuwah Vitzivenu. You are El Sufficient, our El Shaddai. We thank you and praise you. Abba, give us eyes and eyes to see and ears to hear. For we look ahead with excitement to seeing your plan as it unfolds. And we're thankful that we are here in such a time as this. Guide us, we pray. Hallelujah. Amen.